Coming up on Fronteras, both the Senate and President agree the pathway to immigration begins at the back of the line, behind everyone who's legally waiting. But what does this line even look like?
A U.S. citizen parent that wishes to bring over a son or daughter over 21 who's single, the wait for Mexico is over 100 years.
We explore exactly what line or lines we are sending immigrants to the back of. And we look at the last time an immigration reform passed Congress. Its main champion was a Republican president.
I'm going to do everything I can, and all of us in the administration are, to join in again when Congress is back at it to get an immigration bill that will give us once again control of our borders.
Sound familiar? A quarter century's passed since Reagan's 1986 amnesty, but it's still informing debates about immigration today. That's next, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. It's funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. The last time Congress passed a major immigration bill, one of its goals was to stop the flow of undocumented migrants across the border. Instead, it seemed to have the opposite effect. Illegal immigration surged. Today, the legacy of that 1986 bill is a critical part of the immigration debate. From San Diego, Adrian Florido reports.
It was 1984, and Congress had just killed an immigration reform bill that would have legalized up to 6 million unauthorized immigrants living in the U.S. The bill's most prominent backer wasn't too happy.
I supported this bill. I believe in the idea of amnesty for those who have put down roots and who have lived here, even though sometime back they may have entered illegally.
But President Reagan wasn't about to back down.
I'm going to do everything I can, and all of us in the administration are, to join in again when Congress is back at it, to get an immigration bill that will give us once again control of our borders.
That last part about gaining control of our borders, that was key because the Immigration Reform and Control Act was supposed to solve the nation's immigration problems by doing three things.
It was often referred to as a three-legged stool: border enforcement, workplace enforcement, amnesty.
That's Peter Nunez, who prosecuted lots of immigration cases as the U.S. attorney in San Diego at the time. Today, he's on the board of the Center for Immigration Studies, which supports immigration restrictions. The amnesty bill finally passed in 1986, and it included those provisions for border enforcement and penalties for employers who hired unauthorized workers.
And the idea was that if you just granted an amnesty, that would do nothing more than but to encourage additional future illegal immigration. And that's exactly what happened, because the two enforcement provisions never materialized.
After 86, border security barely improved. Employer penalties weren't enforced. And by 1989, close to 2 million people were crossing the border illegally each year. Now, 26 years later, those statistics are coming back to haunt proponents of a second amnesty, or as it's now euphemistically called, a path to citizenship for 11 million undocumented immigrants. Like losing coaches studying the post-game video, they're looking back on the 86 bill to figure out what went wrong. Conservatives like Nunez offer a helping hand, arguing that illegal immigration soared because the amnesty encouraged it, and that the same will happen this time.
All you need to do is look at the lessons we have taught. Come here, and sooner or later, we'll let you stay.
Of course, this is 2013. A lot's happened in a quarter century.
Okay, people love to beat up on 1986.
Dimitri Papadimitriou advised lawmakers on the 86 bill and now directs the nonpartisan Migration Policy Institute.
Things have changed dramatically. We have invested extraordinary resources in gaining control of the border and in trying to do interior enforcement, which is equally difficult.
Today, hundreds of miles of fence and thousands more agents line the border. The Obama administration has deported more people and fined more employers than any of its predecessors. It has taken a long time.
Is this a failure of 1986? I don't think so. 1986 provided the legal requirements that allowed for these things to evolve.
What he means is that without the 1986 law, we wouldn't even think of immigration reform the way we do today. Back then, building up the border seemed a gargantuan task. Finding employers for hiring people who were already in the country was basically unheard of. But today, they're both happening. Maybe not the way everyone would like, but enough to encourage the president to push for another amnesty. Papadimitriou says the one big failure of the 86 bill was that it didn't allow for future legal immigration to meet workforce needs. He says that's why illegal immigration soared after 86, not because new migrants were hoping for another amnesty. Conservatives may not agree with that, but what they don't disagree with is that in 2013, the legal immigration system is just one more thing that needs fixing. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
Both the Senate and the president's proposals for immigration reform agree the pathway to citizenship begins in the back of the line, behind everyone who's legally waiting. But it turns out there isn't one line. There are many lines. And for some families, the wait is so long, it's going back in time. From the Fronteras desk, John Rossman explains.
It's easier to think of the line like the ones you see at the airport. They're all full of people waiting to fly to the United States. There are different airlines or ways to get a green card. But by far, the most popular airline to the U.S. is the family-based visa. There are two pathways to the gate. People who have immediate relatives like a spouse, child, or, if they're under 21, a parent who's a U.S. citizen, they go right to the gate. But the line everyone is talking about is the line to check bags.
The second line, the second rate line, is when you're not an immediate relative, but you are a family member.
Lilia Velasquez is an immigration lawyer in San Diego. This line is made up of siblings or older children of U.S. citizens. Also, the spouses and younger children of green card holders. These family preference lines are divided, again, depending on your country of origin. For countries that have the highest demand on visas, places like Mexico and the Philippines, imagine getting to the airport on Christmas Eve. The line is snaking out the door and around the airport. It's that line times 1,000.
Be prepared not to wait a few days or weeks or months, but in some cases, many years.
Charles Foster worked as an immigration policy advisor for both President George W. Bush and Barack Obama's election campaigns.
Before you will move up in that imaginary line and a visa number would be available to you.
But some of these lines go on forever.
A U.S. citizen parent that wishes to bring over a son or daughter over 21 who's single, the wait for Mexico is over 100 years.
The bottleneck is a yearly government cap on family-based visas. Every country is only allowed 7% of the total number, and that hasn't changed since 1965. But the demand has. For countries with the highest demand, there are simply fewer visas to go around. If you fall into a certain family preference, you'll be waiting for an indefinite amount of time. Velasquez explains it like this to her clients.
Let's see how fast the dates, the priority dates, are moving. And then we can judge more or less when we can be expected that you will become eligible.
A priority date is like a timestamp on your ticket, marking when your application went in. This month, the child of a U.S. citizen who's over 21 living in Mexico is eligible for a green card if their priority date is on or before July 15, 1993. Most of the time, those priority dates move forward and you wait your turn. But sometimes, if there are too many applicants for too few visas, that priority date actually moves backwards, and the line in front of you gets longer and longer and longer. It's called visa retrogression. Gustavo Valencia knows it well.
All they give you is a notification, and there is nothing that you can do. But you would like to know a little bit more. You know, how come I'm not, things are not moving properly?
Valencia has been in this line for 18 years, and on at least two separate occasions, his priority date's been called. But in the few months lag time between scheduling his final visa interview and going, the dates went back in time. He was no longer eligible. We're sitting inside his father's home in San Diego. Valencia has a work permit. He's gone to college in America. But not having a green card has shelved other dreams in his life, like getting married.
If I were to marry someone that doesn't have any documentation, I'm going to be into a different bracket. And all these 18 years that I've been waiting for that green card would be meaningless.
Charles Foster likes to tell his clients, overwhelmed by the possibility of waiting, a story.
I've had people walk out of my office saying, oh, that's too long, and come back 5 years later saying, now what can I do?
And the line is even longer. So that's why Valencia's still waiting after 18 years.
I believe for me it's worth it.
In San Diego, I'm John Rossman.
Coming up on Fronteras, deep in the Grand Canyon, a Havasupai medicine woman is on a mission to safeguard her tribal traditions.
I'm crossing that bridge from my ancestors to teach the children of today, instead of just saying, well, you need to wear your headdress and you need to wear your feathers.
Reconciling tribal traditions in a modern world. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Navajo singer Radmila Cody has been nominated for her first Grammy. She likely will turn heads at the ceremony Sunday in Los Angeles in her traditional Navajo dress and moccasins. But the former Miss Navajo has never been afraid to stand out in a crowd. From the Changing America desk in Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
Radmila Cody's grandmother raised her on the Navajo Nation amidst the rust-colored plateaus and sagebrush.
I mean, you have all this land around you. I had to find entertainment, you know, when I would go out and herd the sheep. I'd sing to them and even, you know, sing to the salt bushes and the rocks. I mean, everything had life.
It was here where Cody rode horses, carted and spun wool, lived off the land, and discovered her voice. It was during this time she dreamed of becoming Miss Navajo. In 1997, she achieved that goal and became the first biracial woman to hold the title. She went on to pursue her next dream, a Grammy. But getting to this point has been rough at times. Growing up half African American on the reservation, even her relatives called her names.
My uncles were, you know, not too fond of having a biracial child in the family. They would make it, you know, known that that was how they felt by, you know, basically belittling me, demeaning me.
Years later, when she ran for Miss Navajo Nation, some tribal members protested, saying she didn't look Navajo. Because of her own struggles with racism, Cody is working with educators to replace a derogatory Navajo word for African-American people with a more respectful one.
I sat down with a medicine man and asked him about coming up with a new name. What name can we come up with so that we can empower our children? And he said to me, in our ceremonies, we call them Nahile. And so, you know, I sat there and repeated it, you know, Nahile, Nahile, Nahile. And I felt a big difference. You know, I felt that empowerment.
Cody also works to empower victims of domestic violence. A survivor of an abusive relationship herself, Cody speaks out about reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act. The current version of the bill would give tribal courts the jurisdiction to deal with non-Native offenders. She quotes frequently cited statistics, like 1 in 3 Native women will be raped.
This is very important, you know, because in the end, you know, it's about protecting our communities and our women who are sacred and give life.
Cody's own violent relationship almost tore her life apart. About 10 years ago, she was arrested and served 18 months in federal prison for her involvement in an international drug dealing ring led by her abusive boyfriend.
You know, and I knew that even while I was doing time, that I had to get to a place of balancedness, a place of harmony, a place of understanding, you know, within myself, a place of inner peace before I could actually go out and help others.
It was traditional Navajo music that helped her through that difficult time. And if Radmila Cody's name is called on Sunday, she knows she will also have to thank her grandmother, Dorothy Cody, who gave her the strength to carry on. She passed away last year. When Radmila got the call that she was nominated, the young singer immediately looked toward the sky and said,
"What are you doing up there? Are you in cahoots with Whitney Houston?"
After the Grammys, it's on to her next dream, getting her master's in sociology and putting a new spin on traditional Navajo music, maybe even adding African drums. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
Hi, old car, be Despite the ups and downs of a precarious publishing business, Arizona Highways Magazine remains an iconic institution. Laurel Morales followed members of the editorial staff into the Grand Canyon to profile a Havasupai medicine woman for the March issue and to learn how the magazine has survived for more than 8 decades.
There are 3 ways to get to Supai Village: by foot, by helicopter, or by mule. We choose to walk the trail on a cold but sunny November morning. A dozen mules make their way out of the canyon as we hoof it down the switchbacks. We feel a bit like mules ourselves with our 30-pound backpacks. Visitors learn quickly to listen for the herd's thundering hooves and get out of its way pronto. Nothing stops a mule train. It's a 10-mile hike to the majestic waterfalls for which Havasu Canyon is known. Before you reach the falls, visitors must walk through Supai Village, where about 400 tribal members live. Just beyond the helicopter landing, Diana Baby Sue White Dove Ukwala waits for us at her home.
This whole canyon is sacred. So I honor each and every one of you for walking and touching my ancestors.
The medicine woman wears a bright green traditional satin dress, turquoise and beaded jewelry, and an eagle feather in her hair. She's painted dark red lines from her eyes to her chin. She says they represent the tears she cries for all human suffering. As the ceremony begins, she asks Arizona Highways managing editor Kelly Kramer to face the sun.
Could you turn clockwise?
Kramer has asked for a blessing. Baby Sue, as she's known, burns sage to cleanse anything heavy on Kramer's heart. The medicine woman waves eagle and condor feathers across her body.
I ask Spirit to give you the strength in both your mind and heart that you can be able to see things that aren't just level, but in the way of looking from the sky and onto the earth to understand the values and the hope that we bring as the human people.
Kramer closes her eyes and takes it in. Photographer Don Kish stands on a bench, then squats, then lays down on the dirt to work the best angle. The afternoon light makes Baby Sue's face glow gold and picks up the tears her eyelashes capture. The ceremony is so powerful that all of us are crying. Baby Sue says she discovered she had this healing gift when she left the canyon for high school. She had visions that came true. It wasn't until a friend of the family told her that her grandfather was a medicine man that she embraced the calling. Baby Sue ends the ceremony with an astonishing cry to the heavens, which she calls the spirit of the warrior. It's this type of stunning scene that Arizona Highways editor-in-chief Robert Steve tries to capture for his readers. We spoke recently at his Phoenix office.
Diana Baby Sue will be in the March issue.
She is coming up in March, exactly. Okay. And so we'll start seeing those pages hanging here on this wall here in a couple of days.
Meanwhile, his staff lets off steam playing ping pong.
When there are two story ideas that we're fighting over, winner gets his or her story published.
Really?
No.
The State Department of Transportation started Arizona Highways 88 years ago. Steve says at that point it was just a trade journal about road construction. Then in the 1930s, editor Raymond Carlson came on board to promote Arizona tourism.
For a long time, the magazine was what I describe as cowboys and cactuses, and that resonated. We have subscribers in 120 countries around the world, all 50 states.
Steve calls these out-of-state subscribers armchair travelers. They loved learning about the Old West, and they appreciated the National Geographic quality photos, but
the magazine wasn't really addressing the needs of the people who actually live in Arizona. So when I came on board, we sort of made a philosophical shift to sort of put the people who live here first.
Since the shift, Steve says newsstand sales have jumped 30%, a revenue hike they've needed since the state has made a habit of sweeping the magazine's reserves.
When times are tough, the state looks under every rock they can and looks for money that can help balance the budget. I think in the last 10 years, it's been approximately $12 million that we've had swept out of our funds. You know, and that's a tough hit for us.
But Steve is hanging on and still investing in stories that he says are critical to the magazine's mission. That's why he sent a small team to visit Baby Sue deep in Havasu Canyon.
Yeah, holy mother of God. Look at that.
Back in the canyon, the ground beneath my feet trembles. I can't believe how close we are to the enormous gushing cascade known as Navajo Falls. Havasupai means people of the blue-green waters. For 800 years, the tribe spent summers in the canyon tending to crops and orchards. Then Baby Sue says in the winter months, her ancestors would hike out to hunt and care for livestock on the rim.
My people were the ones protecting that area for many, many years until we were asked to move.
In 1880, the tribe's fight with the federal government began when the Havasupai were confined to the 500 acres at the bottom of the canyon. Then nearly a century later, in 1971, Tribal Chairman Lee Marshall declared to Congress, "I am the Grand Canyon." His testimony led to the reinstatement of tribal land on the rim.
We are the Grand Canyon. We watch her and we are blessed by her. We take care of her.
Eukwala hopes the article in Arizona Highways will show the Havasupai youth that people outside the tribe admire their home and traditions, and that it's okay to embrace who they are.
I'm crossing that bridge from my ancestors to teach the children of today instead of just saying, well, you need to wear your headdress and you need to wear your feathers.
That evening, our group sets up camp on the edge of Havasu Creek, and Kramer finally has a moment to reflect on Eukwala's blessing.
I felt calmer than I felt in a very long time. I couldn't understand what she was saying, and she translated it for me, but I didn't know what she was saying, but it still resonated. It's probably one of the most powerful experiences of my life.
The next day, before we strap our backpacks onto our sore bodies, we each throw a stone into the creek. Eukwala asked that we leave a blessing of our own so that our children and our grandchildren will be able to experience Havasu Canyon as well. Laurel Morales, Flagstaff.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. Find us on Facebook, and for headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.